Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest edition of Planet Porky. This, of course, is the podcast that spins up there in the cosmosphere, if there is a cosmosphere. And I want to say a very big thank you to all of you and your responses to the Planet Porky podcast, which come out twice a week, Tuesday and Thursday, with a collection of extremely talented, vibrant and, can I say, intelligentsia-type co-presenters. And today I'm delighted to bring back to the microphone the wonderful and hugely exciting Leslie Ann Jones, the woman who I think we can all agree was the original chic rock, rock chic chick of Fleet Street.
Ta-da, she's back.
Absolutely.
Dripping wet, actually, by the way.
Dripping wet.
This is monsoon weather, Mike,
but lovely to see you. It is monsoon weather, but, you know, we're going to talk about planet and, sorry, not Planet Porky, but the weather on this planet and whether climate change is real in a minute or two. But the actual personal experience today, I came out of my pad in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, and the sun was shining. I mean, I wouldn't have dreamed of putting a coat on, you know, even if it was raining, because it was warm, but I didn't feel any sort of a threat. 20 minutes later, I get off a tube train. No, not 20 minutes later, about 40 minutes later, but I got on a train, then I got on a tube. I got on the tube in London. It's still sun shining. Got off the tube 10 minutes later at a place called Charing Cross in London, and the water is running down the stairs into the tube station. It was monsoon.
Now, what is this? So they're telling us no climate change.
It's British summer weather.
I don't think so. I don't remember rainfall like this.
Yeah.
When it chucks it down torrentially.
I do.
Do you really?
Yeah, of course I do as a child. It's called summer weather. I mean, look, if there's a conspiracy going on about, you know, climate change, I agree that the climate is changing. A lot of it's down to sunspots. They come around about every 10,000 years. Okay. But a lot of it is simply down to the fact that climatological circumstances mean that at the moment I've noticed this over the last 2 years, very little cloud cover over the earth 24 hours a day means we suffer more intensely from the sun. But it's only because of the cloud cover. It's not because of anything else.
Nanoplastics. That's what I reckon's doing.
Nanoplastics.
Nanoplastics falling like snow over the Arctic, melting
rubbish.
The icebergs. Come on.
Load of nonsense.
We're breathing that. That's why we have late onset asthma.
Load of utter nonsensico.
Where's your inhaler?
I haven't got an inhaler. Now, as we are talking about climate change, right, first subject I want to get on to you about today, and I think we've got to be very serious about these things, Leslie Ann. We do this podcast to entertain, right, and to lift people's lives, but also to inform. And I want to talk to you about this young lady called Greta Thunberg, okay? Now, who's Greta Thunberg?
Well, she's we're being told a child who is...
Well, she's 16.
She's 16.
Of course she's a child.
She's not a child.
She's a child.
She's very articulate. She's tremendously measured.
Yeah.
But as we find out after yesterday's revelations in the press, she's a puppet.
She's a puppet.
She's currently making her way across the ocean on a boat.
Yeah.
And she's standing up against climate change.
Eco-boat.
She's an eco-warrior.
This eco-boat, by the way, has got an engine. And there's petrol on board in case they get into trouble, right? She is going to take 2 weeks to get from across the Atlantic, right? Where did she start off? I can't remember now. Somewhere like Plymouth, I think it was, yeah. And we won't use any petrol motors. And, ooh, and by the way, we're trading things in the water which make a propeller spin round, which generates electricity for the boat. She hasn't got a toilet on board. Utterly disgusting, right? No toilet on board because they would need power to make it work on a boat, okay?
Wait, what? Disgusting why? In the open ocean? I mean, where do you think fish go?
Well, I don't care about that. You know, I do not like talking about the lavatorial habits of fish. What I'm saying is it's a completely ridiculous stunt. Now, it's going to take her 2 weeks to get across the Atlantic Ocean. Let me tell you this. Christopher Columbus got there sooner. What was the name of Christopher Columbus's ship?
I've forgotten.
Santa Maria. Santa Maria.
But he wasn't really called Christopher Columbus, was he?
He was called...
Cristobal Colón. He was a Spaniard.
No, he was. No, he wasn't. He was Italian, but he changed sides and joined the Spanish court.
Okay,
well, and the Spanish sponsored his
first
trip.
Spanish by default, but it was
If Christopher Columbus can get there quicker than Greta Thunberg, it proves what I've always believed. If these climate change nutters ever get their way, they will take the economy of this world back 500 years. Because if we can't use power to get across the Atlantic Ocean, believe me, the Chinese will, and the Americans will, and we'll be left again like a peasant-type country, which will make Albania look sophisticated.
Isn't that the point, that we should not...
No, it's not the point to look like Albania.
Not to look like Albania, but aren't we supposed to stay put? You know, we're all being told now we mustn't take... long-haul flights anymore. We've got to keep our carbon footprint down.
By the way, Greta's been found out, hasn't she? You know the boat she's going on, which has got, you know, it's all on wind power.
And what's her boat
called?
Engine.
I don't know what a boat's called. I don't care. It's probably called the Greta Thunberg or something. But the point is, when it gets to New York, right, guess what? Greta is then going off on some sort of mad escapade down to the Amazon or something like that.
In a plane.
I don't know if she's going in a plane. I think she's going by road, to be fair. So I think she's going by road, you know, low emission sort of vehicle. But two sailors are being flown over on an aeroplane to America to bring the boat back. I mean, you know, it's all a load of baloxios, complete baloxios.
Question. Where are the parents? What do we know about her mum and dad?
Her mum and dad are eco-warriors themselves.
Okay.
One of them is a teacher, the other one's an actor or something like that. But they're Scandinavian. A lot of Scandinavian people are crackpots, aren't they? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't have carpets.
Hey?
They don't have carpets.
Don't have carpets. What's this? Isn't it called Higgy or something?
Yeah. The sort of spiritual clean living, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Well, with all that ice and snow and all that, they can afford to get into that.
But they're very into sex.
Yeah, there they are.
It's got to be to do with the cold, right?
Well, I suppose so. I remember when Bjorn Borg was Wimbledon champion five times on the run. You know, every time he won, he was supposed to go off and take part in some other tournament in Monaco or something. But he did so much shagging every time he became Wimbledon champion in London, he never got there for about 10 days or something. And I remember reading an interview with one woman who, you know, who was sort of indulging in physical recreation with him, who said that his body was amazing. He was like, his arms were made of steel, you know, and his legs were made of iron. And, you know, he was so physically fit, it was unbelievable.
I wouldn't fancy that. You need a bit of soft.
They're soft.
Something to wrap yourself in and cling to.
Well,
you don't want to be hugging a fridge,
well,
do you really?
But I don't think you want to be hugging a fridge. But anyway,
this is more Scandi noir, though, this, isn't it, really?
Scandi noir, yeah.
Scandi noir.
But poor old Greta, I read in a terrific piece in the Sunday Times, okay, that actually, if you look at it, the whole venture and the whole, you know, we all love Greta campaigns, all started by a bunch of businessmen, allegedly, who will benefit from the biggest bonanza of government contracts in history for low carbon and green policies, the greening of the Western economies. And Greta, whether she and her parents know it or not, is the face of a political strategy.
So she's a puppet, like I said at the beginning. Top of the show.
It says here, the Greta phenomenon has also involved green lobbyists, PR hustlers, eco-academics and a think tank founded by a wealthy former minister in Sweden's social democratic government with links to the country's energy companies and energy minister. So that just about says it all to me.
There's the rub.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, before we got in here today, of course, we got very, very wet, didn't we, in the monsoon rain. And as I've explained to you, that is down to sunspots and the British summer weather. However, I'm going to make a confession to you now. I am seriously thinking, folks, for the first time in my life, about carrying an umbrella.
You never had one?
No, I think it's unmanly.
Come on, no, it's not. No, it isn't unmanly. It's more unmanly to walk into a place dripping like a dog.
Well, I don't think so. I think that has some sex appeal.
I did offer you my scarf.
It's very kind of you. It's very kind of you. I didn't need it. I on the way up here today, as I came out of Charing Cross Station, it absolutely poured down. I took refuge in a doorway, which was a sort of side entrance to the Zimbabwean embassy.
I know what you mean.
Right, yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, Zimbabwe is one of the most broke countries in the world, where people are going to starve. People are literally going to starve because, apart from the appalling economic policies and inflation running at sort of 2,000%, they've had a drought. And as a result of that drought, there's no food. And it's going to be an absolutely international catastrophe. And I want to make sure that the world reacts to that like it's reacted to all Bob Geldof's problems in Ethiopia and all that. You know what I mean? Very trendy to be Ethiopian Bob, wasn't it, in those days? I want us to make sure that we help the Zimbabweans, because Zimbabwe used to be called the breadbasket of Africa before it was ruined by a guy called Mugabe, who smashed it up with mad economic policies. But anyway, the point I was going to say was, I sheltered in the doorway as long as I could. I did not want to be late to rendezvous with yourself, because let's face it, Leslie Ann, men do not let you down.
Oh, and, yes, they do.
Well, not in my case. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to get an umbrella, because you can get a little umbrella. You've got one of these, haven't you? You push it up into nothing. And I could actually get that into my exclusive attaché case.
Got to say, they're not much good. I mean, it was driving rain, wasn't it, coming here?
Driving.
So you're walking along and the rain is coming towards you.
Yes.
And it's falling off the back of your tiny, comfortable umbrella.
Yes.
All down your back.
I know.
Now, if you're wearing casual clothes like us, who cares?
Yes.
But if you're wearing a nice hand-cut suit that's cost £1,500,
yes,
let's say,
yes,
you don't want that getting soaked.
No, you don't. But then you wouldn't go out in that weather, would
you? Plastic Mac, I reckon.
Whatever happened to your Plucky Mac? When I was a kid and went to school, yeah, we had a Plastic Mac in a little plastic container, which you had in your satchel.
Bring back the Plastic Mac.
What happened to them? Well, I do. I mean that.
Well, who do you see wearing Plastic Macs? Ponchos, mind you. The foreigners are all trolling around London in plastic ponchos.
Well, that's even easier to pack in your bag, because you just sort of wrap it up and put it in. I don't know why we don't use them anymore. I believe
I'm gonna get you one.
That we should. Well, no, don't get me wrong. But I have got a
Mike Parry poncho.
I have got an umbrella at home. In fact, I've got loads of umbrellas, but they're all golfing umbrellas, and they're huge. You can't take those out. They're all striped. They've all got logos on for things like NatWest Bank or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. But the problem with that is I don't like carrying attachments around with me unless they're connected to me. So that's why I wear my bag, you know, my smart leather bag over my shoulder, so to speak, so I can't lose it. But I would lose an umbrella as certain as night is day. Now, I tell you what I want to talk to you about, Leslie. I want to talk to you about Mick Jagger, right? Now, you've met almost every rock star in the world, haven't you?
I have met a lot of rock stars.
Now, you've seen this great story about Mick. And, you know, as these people get older, they get a bit more cantankerous and all that kind of stuff. But there's a fantastic story here, really, really fantastic story. Jagger demands a new mattress at every hotel to rest his strolling bones, OK? Obviously, that's a play on Rolling Stones. So it says, Sir Mick Jagger makes a rather unusual demand every time he checks into a hotel on tour. He insists on a new mattress, but it has to be slept on for one night by a minion to break it in. But they're not allowed to unwrap it and take the plastic off, so it's not like a natural sleep at all, because, of course, you'd then get germs on it and all that kind of stuff, OK? One of his, an insider, we know what insiders are like in our business, says, Mick always asks for a new mattress in his room, no matter how posh the hotel, but he insists the plastic wrapping stays on while he finds someone to sleep for one night on the mattress to break it in. It's an unusual request, but, you know, he's Mick Jagger. Does he need a new mattress every time? Who knows? That's his choice. That's what he does. Mick Jagger is 76.
I'm applying today for that job. Mick Jagger's mattress tester.
Yeah.
Question.
What would he be with or without you testing it?
I probably wouldn't necessarily want him there, not in his current condition.
Yeah.
But, question, why does he not travel with his own mattress?
Well, what, hump a mattress around the world?
They take tons of equipment with them.
Well, they certainly do.
Across the world.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What problem is a mattress? To bring your own mattress.
Actually, that's not
and
a bad point.
It wouldn't have to be made in, you know, kept in its plastic.
Yes.
Only he would grace it.
Yes.
And only his bodily fluids would dribble into it.
No, that's true.
I want to say.
I think that's quite a good idea. So what you say is, in addition to sort of the pianos and the keyboards and the guitars and the drums.
They take it all.
And not only that, but they take the stage as well, don't they?
They take everything.
The stage with them.
The lighting rig. I mean, you know,
I was talking. Funny enough, I was talking to a great colleague of mine, Danny Kelly. Danny's a guy I worked with in radio, but he was also used to be the editor of NME. And then Quest, I think. Was Quest a rock magazine?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I wasn't born then.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that long ago. Yeah, well, probably was, yeah. But No, he said to me that, what did he say to me? What did I say, Danny? And Mick Jagger, what were we talking about? I've forgotten.
Stuff you can't on the
road. That's right. No, he told me about these stages, right? So I said to him, I can't understand how these bands can play like Chicago one night and next night they're in New York, you know. And he said, no, when they're on an American tour, there is a permanent convoy of lorries taking the second stage to the concert
that's
after
right.
tomorrow.
Really,
you see what I mean?
Up in the
yeah,
next venue.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So and there are hundreds of them. You see
yeah.
these stagehands.
Yeah, yeah, you do.
And the
yeah.
backstage boys and their roadies, personal roadies.
Yes.
You know, and they strike so quickly. You know how in Formula One when you see a car go into the pit
yes.
for a little quick service.
Well,
whatever,
no, for a wheel change.
Wheel
or something.
Change, whatever.
Yeah. Takes seconds.
So many of them like flying.
Yes.
And he's out of there before
yeah.
we've even blinked.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Really.
With a rock band on
yeah.
the road.
Yeah. I bet it is. I saw an aerial shot once of Paul McCartney's tour, Wings Over America, and the three Plantechnicon lorries at the front had written on the roof, Wings,
right.
and then Over, and then America.
Yeah.
And there were only three or ten lorries taking, you know, the stage and everything to the next venue.
It's a very basic tour, that one, compared to how we
was
do
it?
Things in the modern world. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, very, very...
What, did you catch up with it?
No, I was still at school, but
oh, really?
I was a big Wings fan. So
were
I did,
you?
I watched that film several
What,
times.
Compared to the Beatles?
I discovered the Beatles backwards. I came in at Wings.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I'd missed the Beatles.
Oh, I
so
see.
So I came in at Wings, then the
yes.
the Red and the Blue albums, and then
yes.
worked my way back.
Yeah, Red Rose Speedway.
So it went over my head. Red Rose Speedway, greatly
yeah.
underestimated.
Yeah, I agree as well.
Probably one of his finest.
And someone knocking at door, somebody's ringing the bell, someone knocking at door, do me a favour, open the door.
We'll stick
and
to our day job, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
Right, now then, talking about rock stars, okay, of present and past, of course, you're talking about the Beatles. Let's talk about those of the present and the future, okay? Now, what is it about Ed Sheeran that I find absolutely and completely average?
I wish I knew. You know, so you've got not only Ed Sheeran, I mean, what has he done? All of his songs sound the same.
Yeah, they do.
He's still ginger. I don't
yeah.
know any
ginger
kids.
Beard, an unkempt ginger beard.
You know, I've got kids, university student kids,
yeah.
who say the
yeah.
same. They
yeah.
go, we don't get it either.
Mm. Yeah.
Who are his fans? Who are going to that show?
Yes.
What is it about him that we haven't quite worked out?
Yeah.
You've got him. You've got Adele. Now, I'm not particularly into
Adele. But
Adele
has got a fantastic voice.
Do you think so?
Yes.
I've heard better karaoke done the pub on a Friday night. Sorry.
Really? Than yeah. Adele's voice?
I think it's Emperor's New Clothes. Everybody's raving
Didn't
about Adele.
Didn't she sing the theme tune for like the great Bond film?
She did one of the Bonds,
Spy
yeah.
Catcher or something? Or
whatever. Or, but, you know, again...
And it's a new day.
Here it goes again.
I'll say. She also makes out, you know, to be the world's most normal woman and says at the end of a concert where she's just earned like 12 million quid, you know, I'm going home to see the kids now. I think we'll get a takeaway tonight, I get a Chinese in, you know, sit around the fire, watch a bit of telly and all that, which I quite admire her for, but which other people say, you know, she's trying to fool people that she's just an ordinary woman. You can't be ordinary if you've got a £100 million fortune.
Exactly that. But, you know, it's not very classy, is it? I don't like her delivery. I don't like the way she presents as a Brit on the international stage.
Really? Why? What's wrong with it?
She drags us down a bit. You know, the Beatles had a bit of class, so they did take themselves up a notch.
I mean, they were the first of their kind in the world. And
three of them came out of
council
houses.
And the first ever since.
But they smartened up.
Mm.
They had the gift of the gab, but they did pull themselves together a little bit. I feel that she hasn't. She's very low rent.
Adele,
voice.
Low rent.
Sorry.
Folks, are you getting this?
Low rent.
This
don't
is
like
Leslie Ann Jones really sticking the knife in. Yeah, yeah.
She's not feeling it yet.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of blubber on that frame.
Ooh,
you know?
Dear me. Ooh, golly. Getting back to Ed Sheeran, right? Because that's where they started. See, I just don't get it. I was in the car the other day. I got a very nice car, you know, very expensive Mercedes car, and I was hurtling down some highway, byway or whatever. And this song came on, and I thought, this is very average. And I thought, I bet it's Ed Sheeran, because I've never really heard an Ed Sheeran song. And it was called, and it's some bloke playing, you know, an acoustic guitar, strumming it and singing a few words. Sounded to me like a folk singer in a pub, literally. You know, you said Adele's like a folk singer. And I'll be perfectly honest, I thought this definitely is Ed Sheeran because it sounds so average. And then it said, and you know, then the DJ came back, you know, or whoever was talking. It was a Sunday morning, so you don't get much chat on a Sunday morning, probably all on a loop or something. And he said, Ed Sheeran's greatest ever hit, Telephone. Was it called Telephone or Periscope?
They're all
was it Telephone
the same,
or Telephone Box or Megaphone or something?
Whatever, yeah. Interchangeable. Pick a word.
Yeah.
Fact is, it is Emperor's New Clothes. Somebody's said that he's good.
Yeah.
Somebody's decided that Ed Sheeran is the next big thing.
Yes.
And so he's the next big thing. So he does sound like a guy strumming a guitar down the pub.
Yeah.
The lyrics are the laziest I've ever heard. There was a song he wrote about his mother dying.
Oh, really? That's very sad.
A bunch of daffodils on the kitchen windowsill and all this. I sat there in the car. I thought, I could have written that.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Maybe that's the secret. People used to say about Adam Faith before our time, of course.
Yeah, Adam Faith,
he was a very
great.
Average singer. He was a bit of a heartthrob.
Yeah.
The appeal was once described to me.
What was his song? Because Cliff Richards did, I got myself a crying, walking, sleeping, living doll. What did Adam Faith do? Can you remember an Adam Faith song?
Oh, something like, don't you want to my love, baby? Something like that.
Oh, it's a song a bit like Cliff Richard.
A lot in this song.
Yeah. But I want to see my baby.
That, you know,
she's there with me.
That face you're making is hilarious.
Yeah.
But the appeal was described to me once as being anyone can look at Adam Faith, listen to him sing and think, I could do that.
Right.
And maybe it's the same thing with Ed Sheeran. It's that idea that you could do that as well. There's no great art to it.
Can't remember the words. That's right.
Like a seal. Like a seal on acid.
It was, yeah. But
there's no great art to it, is there?
No. But if you remember, and you probably don't because you're too young, he then went on to become a pretty good actor. He did Budgie. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Budgie was about a sort of a young spiv in Soho, you know.
There was a musical of it.
I think it was.
Co-starring Anita Dobson.
Oh, was there? Oh, I didn't know that.
The wife of Brian May. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
And the musical lasted about a week.
Oh, really?
It was awful.
Oh, well, that's shocking.
Yeah.
But he also went on, I think, I know who he managed, Leo Sayer.
He did manage Leo Sayer.
He went on to become a manager of Leo Sayer. Baby. No, I want to sing.
Be careful. Leo's a very good friend of mine.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
And you can't let the dance go.
Show
and
go
you
on.
Can't let the show, and you can't let,
don't
the,
let
show,
the show.
Don't let the show go on. Yeah, well, I think it was right, Leo.
But Adam Faith also was a financial correspondent in the Mail on Sunday.
Yes, that's right.
Meanwhile, going bankrupt left, right, and
centre. I was going to say. You're absolutely right. I remember that. He wrote a financial column. He said, well, man's a genius, makes money out of it. And then all of a sudden we read, oh, he's gone down for 100 million quid or something.
Of everyone else's money.
Yeah, exactly. Not good. Listen, talking about the pop world, and perhaps we've dwelled a little bit too much on it in this particular podcast, although we have, of course, covered serious subjects, you know, like climate change and all that kind of stuff. It is, of course, the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, right? Mm. Now, do you know Julie Burchill?
We've come to blows a few times, yeah.
Okay, she's another Fleet Street writer and Fleet Street columnist. She still does one in, I think it's the Sunday Telegraph, actually.
Yeah.
And she wrote about, you know, what Woodstock really was about. First of all, it never took place in Woodstock. They called it Woodstock because that's where Bob Dylan lived, right? So they all these smelly hippies, all these out-of-work, smelly, horrible hippies, all coked out their face and, you know, out of their brains on drugs and all that. They decided, you know, get real, man, peace, man, let's stop the Vietnam War and all that. They didn't even know what the Vietnam War was about, but they decided they wanted to stop it.
So neither did the government, by the way.
Well, the Kennedys were the only people who knew about the Vietnam War principle was all about. Nobody picked up after that. Well, nobody was really sure. And getting slightly political here, folks. But don't worry, the war is over. As John Lennon said.
If you want
it. That's right. War is over if you want it. And so this is Christmas.
No, it's not Christmas.
And
it's
a
August.
Happy New Year.
Shut up. New song.
No, but that was the start. So anyway, so this lot, you know, a search party from San Francisco. Would you go to San Francisco? Right. So what happens there is it was Haight-Ashbury. I've been there. I mean, that's literally
or
a junction.
Ashbury.
Was it called Ashbury?
Yeah.
It's a junction of two roads, isn't it? Haight and Ashbury.
Yeah.
San Francisco's brilliant town with its hills, its tram cars and the bay and, you know, what's the jail called? Alcatraz,
off
that's right.
The coast, yeah.
And the Golden Gate Bridge and all
which
that.
Is red.
You know. Golden Gate Bridge?
Yeah, it's red.
It's orange, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of red.
Yeah, sort of orange, I think, when I last drove over it. In fact, I didn't drive over it. A young lady drove me over it to Sausalito, where she lived, yeah, on the other side. But anyway, there we go.
Which is a whole other podcast.
Yeah, indeed. But anyway, point is, you know, they weren't going to allow it to happen in California because, you know, they get quite stubborn about these things. But they decided to push off to the East Coast. America being like split quite evenly between East Coast and West Coast. And so they go off and they get up New York State and they find a town called Bethel. And they knocked on a door and a guy, the farmer, was called Yatska, okay? And they said, can we borrow your field? We'll have a pop concert. And the reason they knocked on his door was it was next to Bob Dylan's house. Well, not his house, his estate. And it's the closest they could get. And they rented the field for $50 or something like that. And they said, as soon as Bob sees what we're doing, you know. Anyway, Bob Dylan was so horrified about the invasion of these hippies. 500,000 people turned up eventually. Once word got out, an old Yatska and his farm, it swamped. It went over like three counties of, you know, New York State. And Bob Dylan said, bollocks to this, hired a private plane and flew to the Isle of Wight. He did.
As you would.
He flew to the Isle of Wight, believe it or not, where there was a small concert going on, which then became a big concert because Bob Dylan had suddenly arrived and he never did Woodstock. But, I mean, those people in those days.
It was a counterculture convention, wasn't it? And half the time they weren't even really looking at the stage. But I read a funny piece this morning about nudity at Woodstock.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there were some great pictures. So everybody's staring in one direction.
Yes.
And then one guy gets up and his bum is, like, centre frame.
Yes, his posterior,
and
yes.
So what did all the nudity at Woodstock teach us about human beings? And somebody said it taught us that people were a lot slimmer in those days.
I suppose that's about
that
right.
Was quite
a
good point.
Yeah, I suppose that's about right.
Wasn't an ounce of fat on this.
But I mean, I would never go to one of those things. I suppose the modern day equivalent is
Glastonbury
or something like that. And why would people, you know, set up a tent in the middle of a field with the nearest bathroom facility a 1 hour walk away? Right?
Not only that, but this I hear from my own children. So they're all standing there in front of the pyramid stage.
Yeah.
Where do girls go to the toilet? And my daughter says, "Mommy, they don't now. They just do it where they stand."
What?
So if the guys can do it, which is what the boys are doing, the girls are doing that as well. They're just squatting. It is disgusting.
Disgraceful.
And it shouldn't be allowed.
Shouldn't be allowed, but these things go on. But anyway, some will say that, well, actually, Woodstock ended the Vietnam War. I don't agree. I think Lennon ended the Vietnam War by singing about it. That's why Richard Nixon, who was then the president, tried to throw him out. But we don't want to dwell too much on that. That is history, after all. Modern-day hippies, what's the equivalent of a modern-day hippie? It's now, isn't it, somebody who... Because, you know, in those days, there was some bloke called Timothy somebody.
Leary.
And he didn't he coin the phrase, turn on, tune in, and drop out?
And who are the dropouts now, then? Who have we got? Who's our counterculture?
Well, I suppose it's millennials, because without a shadow of a doubt now, for instance, when old Boris... You know, whether you're with him or against him, you like him or you don't, he's the first politician in this country to be known by his first name since Mrs. Thatcher, really. You know, she was Maggie, he's Boris. I mean, you don't really call the leader of the opposition, what's his name?
Jeremy.
You don't really call him Jeremy, do we? We call him Corbyn. You know, and Cameron was Cameron. And
or Dave, call me Dave.
Call me Dave. Yeah, but he wasn't. But he wasn't known as Dave. He was known as Call Me Dave, wasn't he?
That's right. Yeah,
you know what I mean.
We talked about this before. I think.
And Blair was Blair because that's a nice, simple, one-syllable word.
There isn't much difference between Boris and Thatcher, which we did used to call her. We talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah.
So it's an easy kind of epithet, isn't it? It's an easy little tag.
He's. I mean, he's just got such an amazing personality. And you know,
it's not even his name, by the way. It's like his third name or something.
No, it's second. It's Alexander Boris Fifel, believe it or not. Phifel or something. Yeah.
Well, you can understand why he didn't go for that one.
Yeah, well, exactly. But you see, I think he's the quality of politician, a bit like Cameron, because they were both Bullingdon boys at Oxford.
They were.
and Cameron got a first-class honours degree, and Boris didn't because he was said to be idle.
He didn't do any work. All he was interested in was in becoming head of the
Oxford Union,
the debating society.
That's right.
And did not apply himself to his studies.
Yeah.
So he was a bigger picture man.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And that lack of attention to detail really bothers me. If you're in government,
I think he was aware of that and turned it around a bit when he made that speech on Downing Street steps before he got in. But anyway, look, drifting too far into politics. Point I was making is that he's now sort of all, you know, hair all over the place and all that. But what I'm saying is he has private wealth. He has, personal satisfaction as a family. He could do anything else except politics. He just decided to have a go at it, like Cameron. I don't think Cameron was a serious politician. Cameron, to me, was just, you know, well, he once said, how difficult can it be to be Prime Minister of this country? And he got there by not caring too much. Mm. And I think Boris has as well. But the thing with Boris is I don't think he cares how it ends up. I don't even believe, by the way, that he's a Brexiteer. In truth.
No, I don't either.
I think he saw an opportunity.
Yeah, but it's the highest office you can go for in the
land,
isn't
it? Of course it can. And he always believed he was going to be... He said, as a kid, I want to be king of the world, didn't he?
And that is kind of our king of the world, being Prime Minister.
Yes.
However briefly, because he might not be there all too long.
Yep.
But it's about ego, and it's about feeding one's ego.
Yes, I agree.
Those are the dangerous people in the world.
That's right.
So you've got Trump, you've got Boris Johnson, you've got Kim Jong-un, and you've got Putin.
Yes.
These guys are running the world.
Massive egos, I agree.
This is why we've got torrential rain.
But sometimes they... No, let's not do the torrential rain. Sometimes these guys get things done. I mean, I have to say that democracy is good. It's probably the best of all the poor forms of political rule, but does not hold things up. We should have had, in my view, right, we should have had a new runway at Heathrow 25 years ago and would have done if we didn't have, like, appeal committees and second appeal committees and third appeal committees. Putin would just get it done. The Chinese just get it done. I mean, what we're seeing in Hong Kong at the moment is,
Talking of umbrellas.
Yeah.
Which was just a sea of umbrellas there yesterday, wasn't it?
Listen, I found out some facts when I researched about Hong Kong. So when Tiananmen Square happened, it's a big square in the middle of Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know there was once a news editor on the Daily Mirror who was so thick? My mate, Ted Oliver, do you remember Ted?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And sadly, Ted, I think we've talked about it in a previous podcast. Ted sadly died of cancer. But he was a great reporter, and whenever the big one happened, he went. And he was sent. It took ages because the Chinese were obstructing flights into China. But eventually he got there. And he rang and got a telephone line, rang his news editor at home on a Saturday night. I'm trying to remember his name now. What was his name? Peter somebody or I can see his face now because I knew the bloke quite well, and he was thick. And Ted rang, and he said, and he had to shout down the line. It's a poor line, you know. Yes. I finally got here, Peter, or whatever his name was. Took me 28 hours, but I am now in Beijing. And the news at the other end in London, this is fantastic news, and turned to everybody and said, Ted's made it. He's in China. Okay, Ted, so you're in Beijing. That's excellent. And how long now will it take you to get to Peking? And the news editor of the Daily Mirror in this country didn't realise that 2 years earlier they'd renamed Peking as Beijing, you know. And that's the sort of people we've had to deal with in Fleet Street for most of our lives, is
yeah,
it not?
Well, yeah.
Now, listen, we talked a little bit about pop stars in this podcast because you, of course, are the rock chick of Fleet Street. Read a story about somebody you may or may not know, John Deacon. John Deacon's birthday, actually, on this very day,
Happy
making
birthday,
this podcast.
John.
Yeah,
68 years old.
68.
Bass player of Queen
and a bit of a recluse.
Well, he is now, yeah. It's a sad story what happened to John, really. Mm-hmm. He was the youngest in the band.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd lost his father when he was 11.
They were only about 21 when they got together, weren't they? Because they got together at the... Did they get together at the...
They were students, really.
Students in London, weren't they?
Yeah. So, Brian was at Imperial College. Roger was studying dentistry. He was from Cornwall. Freddie obviously got kicked out of school, but that was rewritten in all the biographies until mine.
Right.
And John was studying electronics. So
they're
collectively tremendously bright.
Yeah, indeed.
And John was the youngest, lost his dad when he was 11. And then when Freddie died in 1991, he hadn't grieved for his father.
Right.
And so he poured all of his grief over his dad into Freddie's death. And he kind of lost the plot a bit.
Yes.
He performed at the tribute concert, Easter 92.
Yes.
And that was it then. He kind of faded away from Queen.
Right.
Stopped communicating with the others. Obviously still earning the money.
Yeah, about $5-6 million a year apparently.
Sure, and replies to the business emails.
Yes.
But Brian told me recently, you know, we send him a little email, do you want to come to the premiere of the film? He doesn't even reply.
Right. Doesn't even reply to his old mates.
He got into a bad scene with a lap dancer.
Oh, really?
And
You can get into bad scenes with lap dancers,
and he did. He bought her a place. He bought her a car. He bought her mother a car.
Yeah.
And he was living a double life.
Right.
And then his wife, Veronica, found out. And she came and got him and shut the whole thing down.
Right.
And virtually imprisoned him in the house. He became a recluse.
Okay.
So there's the occasional picture of him shuffling around looking like a really old guy.
Right.
But he's given up.
Yeah.
Checked out of music.
Oh, well, I suppose in a way you can say, you know, if he's happy, it's up to him. Right. Okay, Leslie Ann, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. You have been listening, folks, to Planet Porky, the podcast with myself and the wonderful Leslie Ann Jones. And we will be back with you in the next podcast. I remember when Jorn Borg was Wimbledon champion 5 times on the run. You know, every time he won, he was supposed to go off and take part in some other tournament in Monaco or something. But he did so much shagging every time he became Wimbledon champion in London, he never got there for about 10 days or something. And I remember reading an interview with one woman who, you know, who was sort of indulging in physical recreation with him, who said that his body was amazing. He was like, his arms were made of steel, you know, and his legs were made of iron. And, you know, he was so physically fit, it was unbelievable.
I wouldn't fancy that. You need a bit of soft.
Something
to wrap yourself in and cling to.
Well,
you don't want to be hugging a fridge,
well,
do you, really?
But I don't think you want to be hugging a fridge. She hasn't got a toilet on board. Utterly disgusting, right? No toilet on board because they would need power to make it work on a boat, okay?
Wait, what? Disgusting? Why? In the open ocean? I mean, where do you think fish go?
Well, I don't care about that. You know, I do not like talking about the lavatorial habits of fish. Danny's guy I worked with in radio, but he was also used to be the editor of NME. And then Quest, I think. Was Quest a rock magazine?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I wasn't born then.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that long ago. Probably was, yeah. And it's a new day.
Here he goes again.
I'll say. He's the first politician in this country to be known by his first name since Mrs. Thatcher, really, you know.